Hardly any swearing again in this episode. But in case any Lampards out there spot one or two, this was your warning, just in case they slipped through the net. Welcome back, folks, to the Beyond Canal Park podcast, a week which again saw very little local footba in my neck of the woods, with no competitive game for Whitehills or Devon side to speak about. Devon Vale, they travelled to Lossiemouth looking to take home 3 points and return to Banff with absolutely bugger all after a 2-1 defeat at Grant Park. Let me take this opportunity, though, to thank everyone who helped me raise thousands for Bright Horizons by buying tickets for the January transfer window competition. I'm in the process of trying to find some time to distribute the rest of the prizes, so please do bear with me, we'll get them all out to you. Right, without further ado, let's get on to this week's guest. Peterhead gaffer Jim McNally joins me in the hot seat today. He talks to me about his youth days at boyhood idols Celtic, playing for Nottingham Forest under Brian Clough, and being part of one of Dundee United's most successful eras under Jim McLean, playing in the UEFA Cup and many Scottish Cup finals, as well as playing for Scotland in Euro 92. Jim also opens up about his time in management and about his current role at Peterhead Football Club, and of course, he also names the best 11 that he played with. And here's what he had to say. It's a great pleasure to welcome to the Beyond Canal Park podcast a man who has played under Brian Clough and Jim McLean and lived to tell the tale. He has played in the UEFA Cup final and also in a major tournament for Scotland, as well as lifting the Scottish Cup during a decade at Tannadice. He's now a long-serving manager of Peterhead Football Club, and here to tell us all about his journey is Jim McAnally. Jim, how are you doing this evening?
Yeah, I'm great, thanks. I hope you're well too.
Yes, thank you, and thanks for giving up your time to coming on tonight. I know you're a busy man.
No problem.
I always like my guest, Jim, to take me right back to the start and where their love of FITBA began and how they got into FITBA.
Well, I mean, I came from a tough housing scheme in Glasgow, a place called Castlemilk, which is a pretty notorious place, Castlemilk. And all we did was play football, you know, from, you know, you went into school, you played at playtime, you played at lunchtime, and then you went home. And, you know, if it was obviously knowing the winter time or the middle of winter, you went home and played.
Aye.
So I got into the school team when I think I was about 8 or something. I got into the school team. And, you know, it was just, that was, football was all we done. That was, that was it when you were, and you played in the school team, and then you played on a Sunday for your, it was a boys club team. And I was lucky. I mean, it's even at primary school, I played with Ray Houghton.
Okay.
And then he moved to London, actually, when he was 10.
Okay, aye.
And then I went to boys club football. I played with Morris Johnson and...
Brilliant, aye.
You know, Pat Nevin. And just, I was always lucky I played with good players. And,
aye.
And, but I would always say one thing. I played with a lot of guys at school and stuff like that, and they were better players than me.
Okay.
But sadly, they kind of went down the wrong road, if you know what I mean. I don't mean it in a bad way, but maybe not as dedicated. Or,
yeah, the attitude was not there.
Aye, I just wanted to be a footballer, you know.
Aye. The mentality and the attitude can take you a lot further than talent sometimes.
Oh, of course it can. And, you know, then I played for Celtic Boys Club. I was late going to Celtic Boys Club. I was 15 the time I went there.
Okay.
And, you know, I was, in those days it was S Forum, schoolboy forums that
aye.
I think every club had something like 22 or something like that, I'm not quite sure, but I wasn't in S Forum, I was just a player that made up the team, and you know, a lot of the good S Forums were the ones that were ready to go up to when they were 16, they were going to go into the ground staff at Celtic, okay.
Yeah.
And I just got a really good break one day when the Celtic youth team were looking for a left back, and I was playing at left back at that time.
Aye.
And they just come down to our team, and I went straight into this Celtic youth, professional youth team, and listen, Charlie Nicholas and guys like that were all playing. And the one thing I would always say about football is the better players you play with, the easier the game is.
Okay, aye. So
I kind of again went through being really running the mill at boys club level to getting a real break where I was able to play amongst these guys, and the Celtic manager at the time was Billy McNeil.
Okay.
And after maybe about half a dozen games, Bolton Wanderers had asked me to go and sign for them, right, and moved in there. So I'd agreed to go to Bolton, and I actually had my train tickets.
Okay.
And I played a final game for Celtic on a Thursday night at Celtic Park, and Billy McNeil took me into his office, and you know, he just said to me, "I know you're a Celtic supporter, would you like to play for Celtic?" And I said, "Of course I would, you know, it's my dream."
So, was your boyhood club?
Aye. Yeah. So I just got breaks at the right time, and I think there's no doubt about it, you need breaks in football.
Aye, yeah. Who did you grow up sort of idolised? Who were your heroes when you were watching football as a kid?
Well, I mean, as a Kenny Dalglish was a kind of a first idol for me, really. Danny McGrain. You know, that era of players. And when I was really growing up, Celtic had went for a good team, a pretty average team.
Aye, okay.
And, you know, but no, I just, I mean, Christ, I could go through hundreds of them that I've always got in my head, but Dalglish.
Aye.
And I always remember the devastation when Dalglish went to Liverpool. It was like losing a part of your family.
Aye, yeah. You managed to make a couple of appearances for Celtic before you left there, did you?
I did, aye. I was lucky. I played three games in the first team.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes people put it down as more because in these days you played in the Glasgow Cup.
Aye, yeah, okay.
Which was a kind of a first team cup. It was half and half teams that played in them, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But no, I played a league game against Kilmarnock. I came on as a sub, and then I played two cup ties. I played the Scottish Cup against Dunfermline, and I played the League Cup game against Dunfermline.
Brilliant.
So, I'll never forget my debut. That was
a proud moment.
East End Park. It was, we beat them 7, and Charlie Nicholas scored 5. So,
I never forget that.
It was a special
thing, man. The whole family into football and supporting Celtic, it must be a proud moment for Abdi.
Aye, it was. I mean, obviously my father brought us up to, I mean, the whole family were Celtic supporters. He had lots of brothers and sisters, and that's just the way it was. It's probably still the way it is a lot in Glasgow, you know, but so, you know, that was it. And the other thing I would say is I also got to the stage after a couple of years when the manager changed and David Lee came in where I knew he didn't fancy me.
Ah, okay.
As such, and I was quite happy to move on, if you know what I mean. Okay, I knew my time was up to a certain extent. And it wasn't a case of, you know, I just wanted to play for Celtic or whatever. I just wanted to go and continue my career somewhere.
A football player somewhere, aye.
Aye, I mean, it was like, it's like, the thing is, although you're brought to support Celtic, I knew that I still wanted to go out and play.
Aye.
And if it wasn't going to be at Celtic, it was somewhere else. And that's what I've done.
Aye, you got a great move down to Forest, wasn't it? And Clough sort of flew you down to seal the deal.
Aye. Well, I was really lucky because Dundee came calling for me in loan. From Celtic. Archie Knox was the manager of Dundee at the time.
Aye.
And Archie Knox didn't spend a lot of time as manager, but I'll tell you, he was a fantastic manager, Archie.
Okay, aye.
I don't think he fancied doing it himself long term.
Uh-huh.
And I had an unbelievable 3 months there, or 4 months. And,
okay.
And then I knew I could cope.
Aye.
And that's when Forrest came in for me at the end of that season.
Okay.
So I mean, and the thing was, I always remember David Provan, the Celtic, saying to me at the time, you're actually moving to a better team. There's not many players that move for Celtic and move to a better team. And because Forrest had beat Celtic in the UEFA Cup that season.
That's right, aye, they were flying, aye.
So I was lucky. I mean, obviously, you get in there and I didn't quite know what it took me, to be honest, because it all happened so quick.
Uh-huh.
My first trip was a trip to Australia at the end of the season, a 3-week trip to Australia. and Clough wasn't there.
All right.
So it wasn't a case of even having to try and impress
him. Impressive gaffer, he's not there.
it was a fantastic experience because the one thing, you know, when you watch the telly and you watched, you know, these guys that won European Cups and that, I mean, I was all of a sudden there with Viv Anderson, Hans van Brocklin, and
uh-huh.
Ian Boyer, and Gary Birtles, and just all these guys, you know. And you know, the thing about them was they were so down to earth.
Okay.
You always put people on a pedestal, and
mm-hmm.
They were
great to learn the game for.
Fantastic.
Amazing. And so if it was Brian Clough, like, then obviously a larger than life character. I believe you spent Christmas at the Cloughs 1 year.
I did, aye.
Sounds like a TV show.
it was just really nice of him.
Aye.
He knew that I was staying in a hotel myself. Don't get me wrong, I stayed with a lovely family at the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't have left me sitting alone, if you know what I mean.
Aye.
But he was kind enough to invite me to his house, and actually what he'd done was Steve Hodge, that played for Forrest at the time, he was a local boy, and he asked him if he would keep me company.
Okay, aye.
So the 2 years went, and we spent the day with him, and again, it was just some character. He always had these problems with the drink, and even then, on Christmas Day, he was
okay.
You know, his family kind of left me and Hodgie to him in the kitchen, and he was sitting feeding us, and he made me eat Brussels sprouts and stuff like that, things I hated. And we went through, and he put the telly on, and he had the video of the Celtic and Forest game, and, you know. As far as football goes, the game was so simple to him.
Aye.
And I would love to get his take on present day football, where
he liked to keep it simple now,
what happens now, and I really believe in this, you get football played for the back, and basically it's played for the 6 yard line most of the time.
Aye.
And it's fine, I think, if you're the top teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Man City's and the Barcelona's and their heyday and whatever.
Aye, yeah.
But what what happens, in my opinion, is that you get players that are incapable of playing like that,
mm-hmm.
being told to play like that.
That's right.
And they end up, there's loads of mistakes getting made, and I don't think it helps players in that. I just know that, you know, Brian Clough was one of the guys, if you passed the ball to a centre-half, he would castigate you, because he would say, you know, he's there to head it.
Aye, that's right.
I think I don't want him in the ball. If I wanted him in the ball, I'd play him in midfield. And he was just the game was so simple to him, and it was always a joy to listen to him.
Aye, great. And you were playing left back still in plenty of games, and I think I read you got player of the year.
When I went to Forest, I played right back, actually.
Okay, right.
When I went to Forest, I played right back. And again, it took me a while to get in the team, and I spent most of my time trying to get back up the road, because Archie Knox was still the manager of Dundee, and he kept phoning me. and then all of a sudden, Gary Mills got his leg broken.
Oh, okay. Right.
At Goodison Park one Saturday, and I was actually, he used to send me home quite often to see my parents and stuff And I was actually in Glasgow, and he phoned me on the Sunday, and he says, look, you will be playing next Sunday at Roker Park. That's Sunderland's old
stadium. Mm-hmm.
I don't expect to, he said, I don't expect to see you before then, so just turn up for the game. So I never missed a game after that. I think I played something like 24, 26 in the bounce or something like that. I can't remember what it was. And it was a fantastic award, really, because it was an award that the supporters chose as they entered the stadium, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So it's always been a special award for me.
That's brilliant. So was it I read it was the emergence of Stuart Pearce was a factor in you leaving, but if you were playing right back, that wasn't true.
No. It was nothing to do with the emergence of Stuart Pearce, to be honest. No. What happened at that time was English clubs were out of Europe. Money was becoming tight.
Mm.
And he bought me for 30,000.
Aye.
And he got a bid for 80 or 90 for Coventry.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Hodge, was it Steve Hodge went to Leeds? Did he go to Leeds?
Okay, aye.
Chris Fairclough went to Leeds.
Mm.
Steve Hodge went somewhere else. There was about 6 he's went.
Aye, okay.
And it was the 6 that he never really paid any money for.
Aye, balance of books.
Well, he always just wanted to be seen in a good light, that he'd done good business and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I always remember when Donald Mackay was the manager of Coventry at the time.
Mm.
Donald Mackay was a Scottish, he used to be a manager of Dundee at one point.
Aye,
he was
right.
An old Dundee goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember getting a call for the Clough's secretary to go and meet at the Swallow Hotel in Derby, which was quite close to Ryan Clough's house.
Okay.
To go and meet him and Donald Mackay. So I'll never forget, I went in and he always greeted you with a kiss and stuff like that, and then Donald Mackay came in, and I kind of knew Donald Mackay a wee bit anyway, and you know, Brian Clough said to him, look, I'm going to let you two go on with it. He wants 25,000 for signing on fee. And Donald Mackay kind of went, yeah. And I was so excited because it was like 25,000. So he then said, I'll leave you to it and I'll go into the bar and get a drink. So as soon as he left, Donald Mackay went, I can't give you 25,000. And I'm thinking to myself, you just said to him you could. You know? And he just said that.
Aye. He was acting as an agent as well.
He just said that influencing people that they were scared of him to a certain extent.
Aye.
And
one of those guys have just got an aura about them.
Oh, he had that. Aye. Everywhere he went. I mean, he was we done some crazy things with him on Kelly. Singing outside people's houses and stuff like that, and in fact I've done some stuff for books that couldn't be published until quite recently. two kids from Sunderland that they were I think one was 9 and one was 10.
Aye.
And it was Guy Fawkes time, and the Friday night we stayed in the same hotel always in Sunderland. We were playing Newcastle on the Saturday. They were collecting penny for the guy, and I don't think the kids had ever seen a bar of soap. And the hotel manager was chasing them away and whatever. Anyway, Kenny Swain was a lovely guy that played for us at the time. And he told the kids to come back in the morning when we were out for a walk and stuff, and they would get all the autographs. So anyway, come the morning, the kids are there, and the manager appears. And what does he do but take the kids inside and sit something at the table and, you know, tell them to order food and stuff like that. And the hotel manager was, could have seen them far enough, you know. So he then proceeded to stick the kids on the team bus to Newcastle, which is 28 miles. So we took them to Newcastle, and I was the odd man out that day.
Okay.
So he says to me at full time, he sets the kids in the dugout, and he says to me at full time, go and phone their mum and tell them that they're coming to stay with me. And the wee boy says, my mum's not got a phone, Brian. So the other wee boy says, the woman across the road's got a phone. And so you can imagine me going in a payphone, taking James's Park to this woman in Sunderland with my Scottish accent, telling this woman to go across the road and tell this woman that Brian Clough's taking her to, I think it was a son and a stepson or something like that. And it was amazing. There was a couple of, was it a guy called Dave Armitage and somebody else that wrote books and twice they phoned me. And I think when it came to publishing, because of all this stuff with Savile, etc.,
it was never published.
But it was only about 2 years ago that the boy actually told the story.
Okay.
And that's what everybody was really waiting for, was the boy to tell the story. So so it was amazing that some of the things that he'd done, you know, and they kids ended up, it was a shame, I think one of them fell by the wayside and died with drugs when he was a bit older, but he done his best for them. The other boy was still working for him in his post office and stuff like that.
Okay.
I think when he passed away, just reading this article recently, I think the boy was caught with his fingers in the till. And I think Nigel and his brothers disowned him, you know.
Okay.
So it's incredible, I mean, some of the things that he'd done, you know.
Amazing man. So you said there that Coventry was next, and that's what, you linked up with Davey Bowman there, didn't you?
I did. It wasn't my best at times.
No.
Coventry, I hated it.
Okay.
I kind of went injured. And they paid a reasonable amount of money for me at the time. Although I went, me and Alan Brazil signed in the same day.
Okay.
And I think Alan Brazil was something like 200,000 or something like that.
Okay.
He was coming from Man United. But I got injured, I re-injured my hamstring again in the first day. And then I was weak trying to get fit, and then they threw me in, and I was nowhere near the fitness that I should have been. We didn't train hard at Forest anyway, so my fitness was obviously dropping off by then. And I just had a shocker at Coventry. But what I would say is that in that time, John Sillett, who eventually led the team to the FA Cup, the Coventry team, he kind of started working me hard in the afternoons and stuff like that, got my fitness up to a level where I was, you know, back playing okay again. And then obviously I got the chance to come back up the road to United, and I jumped in it.
It was a joint transfer with Bowman, wasn't it? 140,000. Is that right? What percentage of that was you?
I don't know if it was. I think it was 120 or something like that. It was 80 and 40 or something like that. Because I think Coventry demanded their money back type of thing, you know.
Okay, And had you come across Jim McLeod before you signed for Dundee United, or?
Well, when I had my spell at Dundee, the dilemma I had at the end of the season was that Celtic had kind of said, well, you'll go to the highest bidder. And Dundee United were the highest bidder. So I kind of, because I'd had a great spell with Dundee, I had it in my mind I didn't want to play for Dundee United. So that's when, you know, obviously he'd seen me then and quite liked me. So obviously it was a no-brainer for me to come back up to Dundee United, because it was never about money with me. It was always about, I just wanted the opportunity to play in semi-finals and finals, and and Christ, it couldn't have worked out any better for me.
UEFA Cup final in the first season.
Well, that's what I mean. Just,
amazing.
I always remember sitting at the end of that season, right, thinking to myself, it's all downhill for you.
Well,
you know what I mean? It was like, you know, if I'm no daft. You know what I mean? You just think to yourself, there's only one way it can go for a year. Not a bad way or anything like that, but Christ, didn't half at the peaks, you know.
So, I mean, Dundee United in a UEFA Cup final just knew is, it's just unthinkable. And beating Barcelona over two legs.
I mean, the whole season was just phenomenal, you know. We go to the Scottish Cup final, and everything that I wanted, you know, to play in semi-finals. I mean, I think my second game for United, that season was against Rangers and at Hampden in the League Cup semi-final.
Right.
So it was just brilliant. I mean, it was everything I wanted.
Aye. That UEFA Cup run, it wasn't an easy run either. If it got Lens, Hajduk Split, Mönchengladbach in Barcelona, two legs.
University of Craiova.
Romanians.
Romanian team, aye.
Not an easy place to go either.
No, but Lens were actually probably... We were lucky to get away for there with a 1-0 defeat.
Okay.
I actually didn't play in that game. I played in the return game. It took me a wee while to get up to speed with my fitness.
Aye, okay,
I was in every afternoon getting made to run. And because, I mean, my pre-season at United was just a disaster.
Right.
I was so much overweight. And,
okay.
And then I'm sure when I did get in the team, it was only because he was one of the rest players for the semi-final of the League Cup against Rangers, because we were playing Hamilton Accies at Hamilton.
Aye.
And he came down the bus and he said to me, would you be confident playing in the middle of the park, going and chasing the ball? And I hadn't played in midfield before. And I said, aye, of course I would. And I got man of the match and we won 5.
Aye.
And that was me. I never missed a game after that.
So you're right. You were kind of developed in a defensive midfielder almost?
I don't have the defensive midfielder, because we weren't allowed to be defensive midfielders. If there was 3 or 4 of us in the middle of the park, onus was on you all to get forward, except one of you.
Aye, okay.
So you always had to be having a look. If 2 or 3 were away, you had to sit. Aye. If you were away, they had to sit.
But it wasn't a one person's job to do that.
No.
Collective.
No.
Aye.
I think that's more a modern day thing.
Aye.
Defensive midfield. And it's not something that sits well with me, actually, because it makes it stereotypes them into being, negative, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see midfield players passing it forward.
Aye. Yeah, definitely. Who was in that Barcelona team then that Dundee United beat?
Well, Gary Lineker and...
Okay, that was when he was there, aye.
And Hughes.
Mm-hmm. Mark Hughes,
Were the strikers. Zubi Zirea was their goalkeeper.
The goalie,
most expensive goalie in the world at the time.
Aye.
The likes of wee Victor, Calderi. Calderi. I mean, we were actually lucky Calderi got booked to Tannadice and then put him out the second game because he was a fantastic player.
Okay. So did you go into the finalist favourites against Gothenburg then, or...?
We maybe did.
Aye.
I mean, obviously, I don't know what the bookies' odds were or anything like that, but we maybe did. Although Gothenburg were a good European team, I think. I'm pretty sure they'd be in the final.
I looked at the teams earlier, and a lot of them ended up playing in the Premier League later on. It was great to see the two teams. Dundee United were fully Scottish, and Gothenburg were all Swedish. It was two homegrown teams.
I know. That's... For me, that's the way it should be. To a certain extent.
Yep.
And now we've went full circle on it, just about, you know.
I know. But was it about Jim McLean and those players that fit did the hay that made so many finals and high finishes in the leagues?
I think first and foremost, we were probably super fit.
Okay. Aye.
We were organised, and tactically, he was a genius.
Right.
So. I mean, you could play games and move your position 3 or 4 times.
Okay. On the spot, so it wasn't a... He was able to change things,
aye. Counter whatever the opposition were doing. And, you know, I was a member when we played Celtic. Celtic had a great player called Paul McStay.
Aye.
And that was my job, to stop him playing.
Right.
And the manager's theory was that if he doesn't play Celtic, we'll beat Celtic.
Mm-hmm. Aye.
That was always my job, you know.
It's a tough job, that.
It was a tough job because he was some player.
Yeah.
And that's just the way he was. I mean, I always remember the semi-final against Mönchengladbach. Mönchengladbach had a terrific East German player called Uwe Rahn.
Okay.
And he said he'd never played in the first game at Tannadice, but again, it was my job to man-map him over there. And I always remember him pulling me into his office a few days after the game to say, I think Ian St John had gave me a bit of criticism or something in the commentary to say that I wasn't in the game. and things like that didn't particularly bother me. And he says, just in case you've seen that, he says, what? And I'll not tell you what he says. I forgot to say was that Uwe Rahn never kicked the ball either. So that was always, everybody kind of a job today in the team. It wasn't unlike Clough to a certain extent, where what his beliefs were on the game, you know. And so, I mean, we were super fit. We were. There's no way that these present day teams are fitter than we were. You know, because my son-in-law, Ryan Dow, he played for United and stuff like that. He's at Dunfermline now, and I always say that to him. I says, we were, you know, on a Tuesday especially, we were like a running team, you know what I mean?
Okay. Who did you love playing alongside in that squad then? I mean, there were some great defenders in particular, weren't they? But that was maybe because of your protection of them.
Oh, no, well, Dave Nery. Just Dave Nery was world class. And honestly, as a midfield player, I could get the ball and Big Davey would just shout, Jimmy, knock it to the right, knock it to the left. And he would break for the back to the middle. And he was a better midfield player than me. You know,
he'd maybe be alright in modern day then.
God knows what he'd do with modern day football. But we always said about Big Davey, if he was playing against somebody that was lightning quick, he would beat him with a half a yard. And if he was playing against the slowest person in the team, he'd beat them with half a yard. I know he was he was a fantastic player. And you know, Paul Sturrock up front, fantastic player. You know, it was just a pleasure. And you know, when I look back on it, I've played obviously with a lot of top players, and it does make the game easier for you. And I say that to a player like Peterhead and stuff like that. It's the lower you get, the harder it becomes, because good players make the game easy for you.
Did you manage to get some laughs and funny moments back then in good night suit, or was Jim pretty strict on you?
No, we were a close bunch at United. Because there was we had a ruling that we had to stay within 8 miles of the city. So we had, you know, we had lots of night outs. You know, if you had a kid or something like that, you'd Dundee they call it a smoker, you would have a smoker, or the wives were always having night outs. The wives actually probably had more night outs than us. That was because Jim McLean encouraged that. He didn't quite encourage your night outs, if you know what I mean. And the worry we always had in a night out was the fact that if he knew we were on a night out, he went in the morning and the track around the pitch was just littered with cones and you knew that you were going to get murdered. So I must admit, when I came up for Nottingham, and then I think I was about 22, I never drank again. I was about 35.
Okay.
Because it wasn't worth it.
No.
The training was that hard.
Worth it.
And I didn't ever want it. And obviously you have kids and stuff like that. And I never wanted to feel as though, you know, I couldn't be bothered.
You played in 4 Scottish Cup finals, didn't you, Jim? And I think there was 3 losing ones, obviously, before managing to get hands on the trophy. You probably won the hardest team of the lot, beating Rangers in their prime.
We did. it was incredible. But there was also a belief about us. And the big problem Rangers had was, I think they had won the championship maybe 3 or 4 weeks before.
So they'd been partying ever since.
They had switched off.
And
I think their run of results up to the Scottish Cup final was pretty poor. And it was a case of, you know, if they just think they can turn up for the game, then it's not as easy as that, you know. So
as the one that Brewster got the winner.
But we fully deserved it. You know, especially the first half, we played really well. We should have had a stonewall penalty, actually, never got it. And we had a lot of energy about that team. And we had a manager that was bonkers and all, Ivan Golak.
That's right.
he seemed to have the Indian sign over Rangers. For some reason. I mean, we'd went to Ibrox the game, I'm not sure, quite sure when it was we went to Ibrox, maybe it was December, January or something like that.
Okay.
And the Thursday he'd done an article in either the Daily Record or the Sun or something saying, we'll get in there and wipe the floor with him. they're past it, they're over the hill. they're finished and all that, you know. And I also remember in the Saturday morning, Walter Smith says, no team talk to choir today. Bollocks articles up in the dressing room wall. We were 3-0 in 18 minutes. It finished 3-0. And I don't know what it was. I always remember speaking to John McGregor. John McGregor was a coach at Rangers.
That's right, aye. Yep.
And I met him on holiday. And he says that Walter used to come in sometimes and say, what's Golak's in the day? Stuff like that, you know. So
he was as nuts as he came across then?
Aye, I think psychology was his strong point. You know?
I remember the Motherwell final. Eh? That's one of the first teams that I can remember because I wasn't a lot of football on the telly then. That was a memorable final as well. Obviously, not a great team for you, but...
No, it was a great final to be involved in. Just, aye. You know, because of the scoreline, etc. There's no many Scottish Cup finals where you get a scoreline like that.
No.
And again, always maintained, if we would have had 5 minutes to breathe, Motherwell scored as soon as extra time restarted started, you know. Because all we did was chase for long parts of the second half. We were chasing. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we got level again, you know, we needed just five minutes to before we went chasing again, do you know what I mean?
Aye.
But no, it was obviously, when you look back, it's a pleasure to be involved in it.
Aye. Was it all the sweeter lifting that trophy in the fourth attempt because of the disappointments you had previously?
Listen, everyone was disappointing and there was big moments in every cup final.
Mm-hmm.
The first one against St Mirren, we got a really good goal disallowed, which I think over the years, I'm pretty sure I read somewhere, it was one of the worst decisions
that
had been given. It was I can't remember who got to the byline, and it was cut back to Ian Ferguson, and Ian Ferguson put the ball in the net, but Kevin Gallagher had been bundled into the back of the net.
No.
We are St Mirren player.
Aye.
And they gave offside against Kevin. And we were on our feet at the time, really. We were tired. I think it was, I can't remember how many games we've played, it was 60 odd games.
Aye.
And we needed a break to win that cup, and that would have been it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know what I mean? That would have been the take to get, is it?
Aye.
The next one in 88, Celtic, we won up against Celtic, and Eamon Bannon missed a real sitter. We had about 20 minutes to go to make it 2. And if ever you wanted a chance like that to drop to anybody, it was Eamon Bannon. It was a point blank header, and he was great in there. And he actually headed it, and I think the ground was that solid, it bounced it
over the bar. Aye.
So they wouldn't have come back for 2. You know, the Motherwell game, obviously there was big moments in that and all, and then, you know, it was just, obviously it was fantastic to win it. And as you say, today against Rangers and being probably the hardest game, it was special.
Aye, brilliant. Were you still there in the season that Dundee United went down? That must have been extra tough for you, having been at the club for such a long time.
I was there that season. I left at the end of that season.
You didn't have to drop down.
Well, to be honest, Jim McLennan became chairman.
Ah, okay.
And I had more problems with him as a chairman than I did when he was a manager.
Aye.
I had a great relationship with him as a manager, but when he became chairman, he'd done so many things. I mean, I think at the end of the day, he was pretty clear, recognised himself that it wasn't the best thing he ever done was become chairman.
No.
And so I kind of had 2 or 3 bus stops with him.
Aye.
And that was always in my mind that if he was going to be there, that I wanted to leave.
Okay.
So it wasn't a case of jumping ship, if you know what I mean. It was just a case of, and then the thing was, he sold me for 90,000 too, so he made 10,000 profit after all my
all my service.
Brilliant. 10 years out of you, then make a profit. Doesn't happen very often. You did. You joined Raith Rovers, and if it was to be a quite a memorable season for them.
It was. I mean, a great time for Raith Rovers. A bit of irony saying that at the minute. After everything that's happened in the last week.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's obviously an era that they'll never forget. They had a fantastic season before when they won the League Cup against Celtic.
That's right.
And you know, they had a great league campaign. They won the championship, and then they come up. And you had the European nights, which as many people probably thought they would never have seen at Kirkcaldy. So, and then obviously culminating and getting drawn against Bayern Munich. So
taking the lead out there as well, it was an amazing moment.
I know. It was unbelievable. So, again, you know, good memories of that time. And again... I always remember latterly before I left Raith Rovers, and they used to think the supporters here will regret maybe they were losing their patience with the team sometimes and doing, and you just think, you know, you should have a real look at where you should be in the grand scheme of things in Scottish football, you know, and enjoy this.
Good group of guys there.
Oh, aye. There was a really good bunch of guys. Aye. The thing was, they had most of them had come through together.
From
that season, they won in the League Cup and stuff. And in fact, when they won that League Cup, Dave Neri was man of the match.
Okay.
Against Celtic.
Aye.
And Big Davey, I mean, they told me that after the game, they were looking for him, and that Big Davey was away, jumped in a car away up the road.
Okay.
You know,
right.
Big Davey was just a unique man, you know.
Yeah.
He was man of the match in that game. Cool. So, no, it was... they were a good bunch. They were close. And obviously, Jimmy Nicol was on a high at the time as a manager.
Great times. But... if I can just break for club football a wee second, I'm a big Scotland fan, Jim. I go home and away to Mace games, and you won 10 caps for Scotland, but I'm assuming you were probably involved in a lot more squads as well.
I'm not quite sure. I mean, certainly I would think more than the 10 caps that I go, if you know what I mean.
But 10 caps in that era, where there were some great Scottish players on the go, was name, mean feat.
I know. Listen, I've always said that I never felt I was worthy of being a Scotland player. I'm proud of the fact that I played for Scotland, but it was just something that, as you say, when you look at the players, that was about at the time. But again, Jim McLean used to say to me, every national team needs somebody like you to do a job. That's just the way I was, you know what I mean? I was so lucky even in some of the games I played in. Mm-hmm. I mean, I played against Brazil.
Aye.
And that was just after we lost the UEFA Cup final.
Okay,
And to be honest, I could have seen it far enough because I was tired and I was low. And I was rooming with Neil Simpson that week.
Okay.
And I always remember the team had been picked, and Andy had decided to kind of leave us Dundee United players kind of out of it. So anyway, the team goes down, that's starting, and Sammy comes up and says to me, used to go and see Andy. I said, how? He says, my hamstring's tight. And that was typical Simmy.
Right.
So I get down to see Andy. Andy says, are you okay to play? I said, oh, aye, of course I will. To play against Brazil again, when getting back to these days when you're a wee boy in Casemiro, it was just a dream come true. Brazil were the...
That's it. Abdi's second team.
Aye, they were the kingpin.
And was Andy Roxburgh and Craig Brown like to work with, because I'd imagine they're slightly different for Brian Clough and Jim McLean. I've had Craig Brown on actually, but his enthusiasm for football is still there.
Aye. What I would say is, it's I sent a scout to our scout in Peterhead to watch Clyde last week.
Aye, okay.
And in the Clyde programme, the old Clyde physio was a guy called John Watson, and he was your physio at Scotland.
Okay.
And there's a fantastic double page picture in the programme of our Scotland team when we won the European Championships.
Okay.
And it was fantastic. I'd never seen it before. And Andy Rockstra was, you know, we had him shoulder high and stuff like that.
Aye.
And I think that's maybe why I got my caps, if you know what I mean, because I'd come through the ranks.
Aye, okay.
A wee bit. And but to actually see that European champions headline, it's you know, it's amazing to think we're the only team that's ever won a European title, you know, and
what age group was that?
That was under 18s.
18s, aye.
That was in Finland. And it was fantastic, and so Andy, what would I say about Andy? He's a really nice man. Mm-hmm. His organisation, between the two of them, him and Craig Brown, was second to none.
Aye.
The preparation for games was second to none.
Aye.
And it was as good as I've seen, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I felt a wee bit sorry for them at times, because there was a generation of players that had played for Jock's team and stuff like that.
Aye, okay. Mm-hmm.
And they maybe just didn't respect them the way they should have done.
Aye, okay.
Do you know what I mean? So, but they were really good. And I think they were kind of a start of a generation of managers that were a wee bit different. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
so,
aye.
But they were good at it.
Good. Fitbit player wise, obviously, like back then it was probably a step up to go and train with Scotland. Were there players that you like training, playing, socialising with, an international duty that you didn't get the chance to get to?
Aye, I mean, again, that was part of it, where I wasn't that comfortable, to be honest.
Aye.
Was meeting up with guys that you didn't particularly know socially and stuff like that. You know? And I always looked up at people. You know, I remember sitting, you know, guys like Gordon Strachan and stuff like that. And they used to enjoy me telling them stories about Brian Clough and stuff like that, you know what I mean? And, you know, I kind of stuck to the Aberdeen guys like Willie and Big Alec and Jim Leighton and Simi, Stuart McKimmy, you know. And you always, you know, you had your other guys like McCoist and Mo Johnson and guys like that were the Jack the Lads. And, you know, got on fine with them, but, you know, it was just a different... Nah. And I suppose it was like that in every dressing room to a certain extent. You know, you had your guys that were quieter guys, and then you had your Jack the Lads that were out and about and stuff like that, you know? Nah. So...
You got to do something that many players have not been able to do in the last 30 years, and that's represent Scotland at a major tournament, a seniorine as well as a youthine. What was the Euro 92 experience like for you?
Again, it was something that dreams are made for me, because...
Some group as well.
you never quite think that I would ever see anything like that. So to go there, and as you say, the group... You're led in amongst the best players in the world.
Aye.
And to see them at close quarters, it was just fantastic.
I mean, that Dutch team was full of stars.
Christ, aye. but to see them, and actually it's quite good watching them at close quarters, because you see that they're only human at times.
Aye, yep.
And they make mistakes, and they don't work as hard as they should. But again, just to be at that tournament, to see the organisation that goes on. And, you know, to see, obviously, I mean, there was phenomenal Scotland support out there. And for these people just to travel about, and, I mean, it's a dear country, Sweden, they live in, and stuff like that. So it was a great experience, I must admit.
And it's amazing, but only 8 teams qualified for that Euros and Scotland were one of them. It's unbelievable to think about now.
I know, and the wonderful thing for me was I always knew that although everybody was on the bench, mm-hmm. if we were chasing a game, I was never getting on. Because I wouldn't see the somebody that would. But see, when we go ahead against
Russia,
against the old Russia
CIS, whatever it was at the time,
I remember Tommy Craig saying to Andy, get Jimmy on now.
Because you came off from McCoy's, didn't you?
Aye, so I always knew that I'd, you know, when we were holding on to something, that I had a chance.
Aye,
and it was just fantastic to play your part. Mm-hmm. You know, and I always remember, I don't remember a lot about stuff in football, but I had a goal line clearance.
Right.
When the Russian player went round the goalie, it was still alive. And I got back on the line. And
I actually watched those three games just before the Euros. I remember watching the tournament, but I was pretty young at the time. But I watched it all back before this Euros, and Scotland held their own in the other two games as well. They actually played pretty well.
We actually should have beat Germany.
So
it was good to be there and actually contribute.
Aye, yeah.
You know, rather than just, obviously I would have been grateful just to be there and get the experience, but to actually contribute to a win.
Aye.
You know, it was the first time Scotland ever won. Brilliant. So it was special.
Brilliant. Obviously you're into management now, but after a brief return to Tandish, you crossed the road and went back to Dundee. Was that not such a big deal because you had been at Dundee before?
No, it was. I've always found it pretty easy.
Aye.
I don't know if it's because there's an element of Dundee supporters know that I'd been there before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And again, I don't score a lot of goals, but the first time I'd been there, I scored the goal that kept them in the Premier League that season.
Aye.
Against Hearts at Tynecastle, so
aye.
It was an element of support. That don't get me wrong, there was people hated me just because I'd been at United.
Ah, yeah.
But it never particularly bothered me. I still stay in the city.
Yeah.
And nobody ever bothers with me really. You know, I've seen it with other guys where they get dogs abuse.
Okay.
They didn't be supporters or whatever, but I never really had that problem. As I said, I'm not daft. I don't know. It was people just seeing me as a Dundee United player.
Yeah.
And that was it. But nothing that bothered me to that extent.
No. Was coaching management, it was something that you thought you would get into, or did that just come laterally?
No, it was always something I wanted to do. It was, I was always seeing it as the next natural progression. I wanted to do it. And, with such a good grounding, to watch the Cloughs and McLeans and Archie Knox so it was just a natural progression. And
are you able to bring anything of them into modern day management, or is it tough now?
I don't think you ever lose the value that they give you on the game, as far as as I said to you earlier, if you ask a player to do something that they're not capable of doing, you're asking for trouble. And then you just got the values of try and be positive, try and play forward, get the ball in the box, just put the positive things in the game. And to be fair, good habits in the game are habits that these guys always gave you, the Jim McLean's and Brian Clough's and Archie Knox's it's stuff that never leaves you.
Yes. Aye. You won the league with Morton, and you've won it twice with Peter Heade as a manager. How does it compare winning trophies as a manager to a player?
Obviously, Dundee United winning the Scottish Cup was special. Mm-hmm. The leagues that I won, really the best league I won was the first one at Peterhead.
Aye.
Where it was near a day where we expected that we could win it, if you know what I mean. It was our score went through somewhere else and
it was our last day. Aye.
It was special,
Yeah.
But it's you know, it's good to come in here. They were all great, but I think it's better as a player, to be honest.
Aye, yeah. You've had a couple of clubs, but you've settled into the role at Peterhead. You're long serving there now. I think that was 2011 you went to Peterhead. What is it about you and Peterhead? It seems to fit really well.
I think first and foremost, it's just working with good people.
Aye.
That give you a chance to do the job. I mean, we've obviously had to cut our cloth accordingly in the last couple of years.
Yes.
With COVID and stuff like that. And I think that's brought a different challenge.
Aye.
Which is a challenge I've quite enjoyed because we've had to cut back.
Mm.
We've now got ourselves a young team.
Yeah.
And that's been really pleasing because, okay, you get a lot of inconsistency with your results, but young players, you can see improving.
Aye. Are you being able to develop some local players as well?
Well, we just...
Since somebody came for the Brock.
Aye, Owen Cairns.
Aye, that's sweet.
Just signed a wee boy, Jack Brown, for the office.
Okay, aye.
I've been really impressed with Jack any time I've seen him.
Aye, brilliant.
So, I signed Amy Fritchie last year for the Inverurie Locos.
Aye, yeah.
So, there's a lot of talent in the Highland League.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just a case of keeping your eye on it and making sure that if they become available, that you can get them. The problem being in the Highland League is that clubs don't let them go for, for very, they're always looking for good money.
And certain clubs are probably able to offer just as much money as you are.
I know.
It's a toughie. And I think some of the players in the Highland League are happy in the Highland League as well, rather than making a step up and challenging themselves.
Well, that's the ones that you've got to try and keep away from.
Aye.
and I don't mean that in a bad way.
Aye.
Yeah. When I first went to Peterhead, we'd a few boys that were happier playing local because they didn't want to journey and travel and whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I've always loved the boy Barber at Fraserburgh.
That's right. Aye, Scott.
For me, he would absolutely be a right good player in the leagues. But he's always been content to play local, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many players I've tried to see if he'd be up for it, but he's always, just been wanting to stay local.
Aye, okay. You've also got a bit of a podcast legend at the club and on your staff in Si Ferry. He must be great to hear about the club.
He's not a fool that everybody thinks he is, to a certain extent.
No, you can tell that. You can tell that when he speaks.
He's his coaching has been really good.
Aye.
He thinks a lot about his coaching sessions.
Mm-hmm.
He puts really good demands on the players. And I think it's a natural progression for him to be a manager.
That's what I was going to ask. You think he'll be a future manager? Definitely.
Once he cools down a wee bit.
Aye.
At the minute, he can be kind of a feisty.
Uh-huh.
And he needs to, he just needs to calm down a wee bit. But he's enthusiasm.
Yeah.
I love this word, putting demands in players, because I think that's what they need. They need demands put with them.
Definitely.
If I was at Celtic or Rangers and I had to spend all these money in academies, these millions of pounds that they spend, I'd have somebody like Simon Ferry in charge of it. Somebody that's going to put demands on these young players, not just to mamby-pamby them, but to actually put demands on them to be good footballers.
That's right. That's what young folk need in general, I think, these days.
Aye.
Brilliant. What are your ambitions for Peterhead this season and over the next few years?
Well, as I said, we've got a younger team now. I think we're a wee bit, at the minute, we're a wee bit in between. We're close enough to the promotion playoffs, and we're close enough to relegation.
Aye.
So it's a wee bit in between. So
yeah.
I think the main thing is to make sure that we survive this league and give these players another year just to keep improving. Because I think when you get young players, you just get better, you know.
Yes.
And it gives you a wee identity, you know.
That's, you know, certainly.
Mm-hmm. If you look at, like, say, Cove, they've got a lot of players that are getting to the wrong end of their career.
Yes.
And we've been there, you know what I mean? So it's just a wee rebuild again, and hoping that we survive.
Aye. And personally, where do you see your management career going? Are you happy in the job you're in for the long term?
I gave up my ambitions as a manager, really, when I left Morton as a full-time manager.
Aye.
I don't know if it was just the fact that that was a club. I mean, I had a great relationship with the chairman of Morton. He was a fantastic man.
Okay.
But, you know, I must admit, I didn't like the abuse.
That came
with the job. I mean, again, talk about supporters. Morton had fans that thought it should have been the top half of the Premier League, you know. So that was something that I quickly...
Aye.
You know, I enjoy working with part-time players because I love the fact that they go to their work,
they come in training,
and I just love their attitude. I'm in a good place at the minute, and
good.
You know, my time will come when it's, you know, at some point. But at the minute, I'm quite enjoying it.
Good. Brilliant. Well, Jim, we spoke about it before we came on, but if you could maybe, I usually like my guests to take me through the best 11 that they played with. If you can take me a quick run through that, that would be magic.
Well, my head, I was lucky that only for a short period of time I played with Hans van Brocklin.
Okay.
He was a Dutch international goalkeeper. He was at Forest.
Aye.
And... I wasn't along there till he went back to PSV Eindhoven.
Aye.
He was a top goalkeeper, top goalkeeper.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of a back four. I would have Danny McGrain, probably one of the best players in the world, right back. Dave Neri, I've already spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
Des Walker, that I was lucky enough to play with Forest.
Right.
Tez wasn't great with the ball at his feet, but God, she tried to beat him, and he was so quick, and he defended brilliantly. And at left back, I was putting Maurice Malpass. I thought he was so underrated, Maurice Malpass. He was a top player, and you know, such a steady player that could drive forward and just. Never gave the ball away, and really good defender. He was a top player. You know, I would say middle of the park, it was Gordon Strachan. Gordon was a fantastic player.
Aye.
And, you know, to be the size that he was, he had to be.
Aye.
He had so much skill, but so much enthusiasm, and he had a wee bit of bite about him. So much skill. He was a top player. Yeah. Paul McStay. Before I came up against him, I knew him very well at Celtic. He's probably been one of the unluckiest Celtic players ever, because he didn't play in the best of eras for Celtic.
No. But
you know, if he was maybe there in the Mark Lanier era or something like that, or the Brendan Rodgers era, he would have been probably even more.
He was a class act, though. You know,
He was a top player. Paul Sturrock, you know, just he was a wonderful player, Paul Sturrock.
Yeah.
Equally good, whether he was out wide or through the middle. And you know, so intelligent.
Aye, yeah.
There are striker Charlie Nicholas. Charlie was an unbelievable talent. He probably left Celtic too early. Went to the bright lights of Arsenal. Done okay for Arsenal, but he probably picked the wrong club, because I'm pretty sure he had the choice of Arsenal and Liverpool at the time. And I think Liverpool would probably have been better for him with the Gleeson Souness and all these guys.
For off-field temptations and that, maybe.
Aye. Aye, exactly. That was that was exactly. They was in the cold champagne challenge. and then the other one I was in the middle of the park was another great player. I played with Forrest, Big Johnny Metgod.
Oh, aye.
He actually signed in the same day as me for Forrest from Real Madrid. and he was something else, Big Johnny. I mean, a wonderful footballer. He was about 6 foot two, 6 foot three. Brian Clough used to say that he used to bring love to the ball. That was what he used to say. he was something else. And see, the other one I think I always said was Steve Hodge. Steve Hodge was, I mean, he played for England, and
that's right.
Great attitude, top player, you know. And I've just been listening. I always find it hard to talk about 11s, because John Robertson, who's a close friend of mine, he always gives me stick for putting them in these teams all the time, because I mean, you're talking about a guy that's won two European Cups.
That's right.
And Nottingham Forest, you know, made one of the goals.
That's right.
The first year they won it, and then scored the winner the second year they won it.
Aye.
He was just an unbelievable player, Robbo. And so I've been lucky that I've been blessed with
some class players.
Gary Buttles was another one. A fantastic player. He actually went to Forest at Man United and back to Forest because it didn't happen for him at Man United.
That's right.
So, top players.
Brilliant. Great team. Who'd skipper that team?
Who would skipper it?
Aye.
Well, I was going to say Big Dave Neri, but Big Dave didn't like having to talk too much.
Oh, well.
I would say Malpass, probably.
Aye, okay.
Malpass, aye.
And who'd manage the team?
Who would manage that team?
Yeah.
Oof. I think Clough would be better managing that team. He could cope with it better.
Aye.
Jim McLean would be too much for one or two then.
Would you get many games if you were in that squad?
No.
No?
No, no doubt.
Fair enough. Jim, that's been brilliant. I was just finish off with four or five quick fire questions just to round it off, if that's okay.
No problem.
First team name says, one thing you would change about football to improve it?
I would maybe give you an extra point for scoring three goals or something like that.
Aye, a courage to attack and play.
Uh-huh.
Aye, that's a good one. Okay, who would you like to play you if they made a movie of your life?
Who would I like to play me? Al Pacino.
Okay. One other club you'd have loved to have played for?
I suppose Barcelona.
Aye. Class. You beat him at least. If you could bottle just one moment of your career to relive over again, what would it be?
I think it's probably the moment when John Clark scored that equalising goal in Barcelona.
Aye, okay.
Quality. That was just an unbelievable feeling.
Aye.
And again, when you get back to when you were a wee boy and you never thought you'd get near the new camp, far less playing it, and then far less, you know, playing a team that wins in it, you know. So
yeah,
it was a fantastic moment.
Okay. And lastly, is there a pro player at present who do you think is closest to you in terms of style, attributes and personality on the pitch?
That's a tough one. One of my main players actually, Peterhead, the boy Andy McCarthy that I've got.
Okay, aye.
I really enjoy him because he's actually more skillful than I was. I love his attitude. I love the way he gets in about people and chases it down. And they're hard to find, these players now.
Aye. Yep. Brilliant. Oh, Jim, thank you very much for giving up your time tonight. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
It's been really enjoyable. Thank you very much.
Okay, James. Thank you.
A massive thanks to Jim for joining me on the podcast this week. As always, I'm indebted to my guests for giving up their time to talk to little old me. It really is much appreciated. If you enjoyed today's episode, why not trawl through the back catalogue of episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on Anchor FM?
there is something for everyone in the previous 70 episodes or so. Please also subscribe, and if you're in a good mood, leave a nice 5-star review. You can find Beyond Canal Park Podcast on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, so if you want to interact or you want to come on the show yourself or suggest someone, then do not hesitate to get in touch. I do love reading all your comments and messages, and I endeavour to get back to everyone eventually when I make my way through them. Okay, I'll see you all for the next episode, when I'll be joined by Scott Thompson. It sure be another good one with stories galore. Until then, bye for now.